Hello and welcome back to the Deadology Podcast from Pencil Hill Studio, New Paltz, New York. I'm your host, Howard Weiner. Today is November 7th, 2024. This is Season 2, Episode 37 of the podcast. And today is going to be a tribute, a musical tribute to the life of Phil Lesh. And I've been meaning to get to this over the past week or so. I had all the tracks pulled out and edited, and I was ready to go. Something seemed to happen every night, but I'm finally here. It's a nice Thursday afternoon in New Paltz. I really wanted to do the show Monday on my birthday, but my birthday festivities went on a little too long. And then Tuesday night, I got caught up in the election coverage. And then last night, I'm like definitely doing it last night. I pull into my my parking space. I take a step out of the car, and about 10 yards away from me is an enormous black bear. And I did the intelligent thing. I got right back into my car, drove around the block, let it be on its way. I don't know, maybe it wanted to join me for a podcast here in Pencil Hill Studio, but I think it had its sights set on the dumpster behind my apartment complex. So I spent the next hour and a half just researching black bears and all that kind of stuff. But hey, man, we got the Phil Lesh tribute. So on October 25th, it was a Friday, if I think I got the date right, on the radio, I heard of his passing, and definitely, surprised. Shouldn't have been that much of a surprise, but no one was thinking about Phil, dying or anything like that. We knew he wasn't in great health, but a surprise, definitely saddened. But pretty quickly, when you consider Phil Lesh, he had lived such a great life, so fulfilling, so much music. He had, a great family, spent a lot of time with them. He had the larger Grateful Dead family, 30 years playing with the Grateful Dead, 30 years with Phil and Friends and other configurations. So he definitely didn't get cheated. He created so much great music for the world, man. Great life. He had the liver transplant about 25 years ago. And to live another 25 years and be able to enjoy your family and create music, what a blessing. So his life really is a huge celebration. So I listened to Searching for the Sound, the audio book of that. It's a bridge, so it's not as long as reading Searching for the Sound, but it was pretty cool to hear Phil's voice. And just thinking of how they met and how it all came together, it makes sense how the Grateful Dead became such a great band, but we're just so lucky that these guys met. So Phil and Garcia met, a few years before he joined the band. Phil was a trumpet player, classical music background, jazz, but definitely a music master, well-versed in a lot of stuff. And he was just drawn to Jerry. Jerry just had that charisma, man. Anyone who listened to him play and was around him immediately took to Jerry. And Phil eventually came around on rock music, listening to some Bob Dylan. And he was seeing the Warlocks in Magoo's Pizza Parlor and, enjoying the show, wanting to dance. They were making him sit. And Garcia came up to him after the show. And, it was like very determined, almost serious, and said, "Hey, Phil, we need you to be the bassist in this band." And Phil jumped on the opportunity, even though this really wasn't what he was trained to do musically. He just seized the opportunity because he knew there was something there with Jerry and Garcia's intuition, man, just to, like, he knew this was the guy. This was the guy that could bring something to the band that he wasn't bringing, a different musical background to go along. So Jerry's got the folk, he was a big R&B fan back in the day. He's got the bluegrass, Pigpens, the hardcore blues guy. And now Phil brings this other dimension of classical and jazz music. And it's just incredible. So it's really no wonder that the Grateful Dead became the band they were, because no band had such a, at that time, had such a diverse mix of musicians with different backgrounds. So it's, in a way, it's easy to see how the Grateful Dead, it's an improbable kind of thing, but with the musical backgrounds and the acid and just the timing right with everything, how it all came about. And to kick off the musical tribute for Phil, I was thinking let's do some signature Phil licks, songs that you always think of Phil, and those bass bombs, bombastic songs. So I'm going to kick it off with a Truckin'. This is from the Cap Center, August 31st, 1980. I realized that most of the long, great versions of Truckin' are from 72 to 74, but this is kind of like an outlier. Not as long as some of those versions, but unbelievably hot. Maybe the hottest Truckin' jam I've ever heard. Big fan of this one. It's great pre-drums on this night in the Cap Center. It was greatest story, Uncle John's Lost Sailor Saint. Just a gorgeous Comes a Time into Truckin'. And the improvisation that Phil and Jerry do here is brilliant. So after they do the typical crescendo part, they add on like another 3 minutes or so. And Phil's just kind of leading the way, you know, laying down bass leads and at the same time creating a foundation for the music. He's, you know, kind of like an offensive lineman opening up holes for Jerry to fill. And boy, did Jerry go off on this Truckin'. So pretty incredible. Here it is, the Truckin' Jam from Cap Center, August 31st, 1980.
Straight to the stage.
An insane truck in there. I love how the jam seems like it's about over, but they find a way to regenerate it and have a great, awesome improvised conclusion. And Phil delivers some bass bombs at the end, exclamation points, for one of the hottest trucking jams you'll ever hear. And when I think of Phil, another thing I think of, like a signature kind of thing that he did with the band, were the thematic jams, which would show up in songs like Dancing in the Street, Other One, Dark Star. The band was heavy on these through the years, pretty much 71 through 70. Actually, I think they really started doing that a lot in 69. So about 69 to 74, a lot of these, you know, the Spanish Jam, Feeling Groovy, what's that other one? I'm thinking of Smoky Soul Town. Tighten Up. There we go. Tighten Up. All these kind of cool jams that just popped up in songs, and always kind of Phil was leading the way on them. And right now, let's listen to a Spanish jam. This one, I picked this one from Roosevelt Stadium, August 6, 1974. Recently did a podcast on that show, probably a couple months ago. And the reason I picked this Spanish jam is because Phil totally leads the way into it. It's really, he's the dominant player, at least for the first couple minutes of this Spanish jam. Just a great great performance here by Mr. Lesh. So let's check it out. Spanish Jam, Roosevelt Stadium, 74. Go the Miles Davis influenced Spanish Jam. And in addition to reimagining how a bassist could play bass in a band, Phil, he brought so many things to the Grateful Dead and the world of music. Also, just his weirdness, his experimentation, and his sense of humor. And I think we get a little bit of all this in the famous Raven Space from Baltimore. In 1982 is April 19th, 1982, the night before he did an Earthquake Space in Hartford. And I remember getting these tapes and, you know, just it was pretty amazing to hear Phil do the Raven. And Baltimore was essentially Edgar Allan Poe's hometown, so it was pretty fitting. And I'm going to play that for you in a second. But before that, I just want to share with you my almost encounter with Phil. It was an almost encounter of 2 hours, and let me explain. It didn't happen, unfortunately, man. Fate was not on my side. So I'm working at a mattress shop, Sleepy's. You know, I'm doing my, I'm finishing off my master's at the new school, and I'm getting a master's in creative writing. And it was the perfect job because we got very few customers. We could just, you know, I could just sit in a mattress store and write and, you know, that type of stuff. So it was a perfect job. And there were like 30 Sleepy's in the New York City area. So a typical day, you only saw a handful of customers. And I show up Wednesday morning at the store, which I worked at most of the time, which was on Avenue of the Americas, kind of by Union Square. And everybody's calling me the second I got in. They're like, "You're not going to believe this. Phil Lesh bought a mattress in your store yesterday." And I was, sure enough, I go to the computer, I look up the sales, and there it is, Phil Lesh. He bought a $4,000 mattress. I worked in the store on Monday, and I worked on the store Wednesday. He came in on Tuesday. So, yeah, the year was 2009. And that, just imagine like me being there. I would have fallen off my chair if I seen Phil Lesh walk in the store. But then the cool thing is, or it would have been, is a mattress sale, a quick mattress sale with all the paperwork and everything, takes an hour. Typical sale could take up to two. With me selling Phil, it would have taken 3 or 4 hours because I would have kept him in that store forever, man. I also would have given him a nice discount, which he didn't get with the other salesperson. The other salesperson never heard of the Grateful Dead, or, you know, never, obviously didn't know who Phil Lesh was. I'm not sure if Jill, Phil's wife, was there when they for this mattress thing. But if it was me and Phil, it would have been crazy, man. I would have been like, "Yeah, Phil, I know you like that one, but you should really try this one over here. By the way, which bus were you on again in Europe 72? Was it the Bozos or the Bolos?" I would have kept Phil there all day just talking with him. But yeah, that would have been so cool. But fate had Phil walking into that store on Tuesday instead of Monday or Wednesday. And all I have is an almost meeting story instead of how cool that would have been to spend a couple hours with Phil Lesh. I probably would have locked the door and not let any other customers in. But yeah, so onward and forward with the Raven. This is from Baltimore. And once again, I said it was April 19th, 1982. It was the last show of the tour, a really hot show. I like that show a lot. Feel Like a Stranger, Franklin's, Estimated Terrapin, and then drums. And then they do the Raven Space, which you're going to hear right now. And then it goes into the Wheel. Hot show. Worth checking out the whole thing if you get a chance.
Or was it? Everhorn!
Was a dark and stormy night, wasn't it? The raven, knock, 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 knocking on our chamber window.
More nitrous. Oh.
It was a dark and stormy night, wasn't it? The Grateful Dead bringing the Raven to life in Baltimore for 1982. And I don't recall Edgar Allan Poe writing the words more nitrous, but this is the Grateful Dead interpretation of the Raven. Pretty cool stuff. And, you know, Phil's, you know, if people were, I'd imagine the most popular Phil composition songs. Well, Box of Rain, I think, obviously would be number one. And Unbroken Chain, you know, what a great tune that was. Really, if the Grateful Dead, you know, if they really kind of missed out not playing that until 1995, man. I just love the musical arrangement of that great song. And right now we're going to take a listen to one of the more underrated, overlooked Phil songs, probably in to some degree because Bobby sings it. Bob Weir, you know, some people might consider it a Bob song for that reason, but Passenger from Terrapin Station, 77, this is a personal favorite of mine. The band stopped playing it in 1982, not sure why. It was a The song was just a powder keg, one of the short, explosive songs. And I think it got replaced by songs which weren't nearly as good as Passenger. But by the year 79, with Brett Midland in the band, the song really took off. And the version, the jam I'm going to play for you now, is from Ann Arbor, November 10th, 79. This was the next to last song of the set, and I think this is the best Passenger. Check it out. The November 10th, 79 Passenger from Ann Arbor. Jay Garcia, a blizzard of guitar virtuosity there. Awesome version. If anybody knows of a better, a hotter version of Passenger, please send me an email. I won't be expecting any emails on this matter, but if you want to reach out to me, catfishgarcia82@yahoo.com. And coming up next is probably the song which most, we're looking for the word, symbolizes Phil Lesh and his incredible bass work, The Blast Off from The Other One. I don't think there's any more of a signature Phil Lesh moment than when he would blast off the band into The Other One. And The Other One was played from 68 till the end. Always a great tune, but especially in those early years, they really kicked ass on it. Awesome tune. In the 80s, it wasn't quite as long. The jams got a little shorter. But the one I'm going to play for you now is really, once again, for the decade, it's an outlier, just an outstanding version. It's 17 minutes long. We're going to hear about 10, 11 minutes of it because it's that good. It's from Ventura, July 31st, 83. I went out to these shows. This was the only trip I made to California to see the Grateful Dead. They were the shows on July 30th and 31st in Ventura. Very memorable trip, great shows. But man, this other one, so that they go into the other one, and it's about 6 or 7 minutes of slowly warming up to the other one, which kind of created an incredible tension. And then Phil took over with his trademark signature bass beginning to the other one, and the band just took off. And what's notable about this version, Garcia is very hot on it, but Phil's kind of counterpoint playing is how he's able to play bass lead and make it comfortable so it's not on top of Garcia's playing, how they play together in the other one, you know, as the music rolls along side by side, you know, it's amazing how Phil got to do all those bass leads and make it work within the structure of the song. But if you don't know this one, I think you're going to really enjoy it. Once again, it's Ventura, July 31st, 83, and we're picking it up about 7 minutes into the other one, and we're going to hear the great blast off from Mr. Phil Lesh. We'll be right back.
were smiling on a cloudy day. An empty space. The terminal lane is loaded with the bus stop in its place. The bus come on and I got on. Let's win it all again. There was Tom O'Neill at the wheel of the bus. He remember Amberland. Coming around, y'all.
Pair of awesome other one jams there. Phil definitely has his A game going all the way through. And yeah, hey, the other day on my birthday, I was going to talk about this I listened to the Colgate show from November 4th, 77. That's the date of my birthday. And I'm 61. The Colgate show is like 40, 47. Do I got my math right there? Yeah. The Colgate show is 47 years old. And I'm listening to it on the GD Sirius channel, Sirius XM channel in the morning. And I've heard this show many times. I've written about it. Did a podcast on it last year. Just blown away by how the music transcends and keeps sounding better every time. I don't know of any other band like this where the music just, it grows in stature and it ages better than fine wine. Man, that Let It Grow and just that the whole first set, they were on fire. And then Phil, in one of his, once again, humorous trademark moments, opens up the second set by introducing the band as the Jones Gang. And yeah, one of the great shows in 1977. It was a few years before I got into the Grateful Dead, but I went back to Colgate to Cotterill Gym. It was the smallest place they played in 1977, and you step inside, and it's really hard to imagine a stage, the Grateful Dead in there, and like 3,000 fans packed in. But just an incredible night in an intimate venue with the Grateful Dead on top of the world. And we're going to close out this little tribute. I mean, if you do a Phil Esch tribute, I could go for 20 consecutive hours, you know, easily. But we're going to close out with a Box of Rain. But before we do that, I just want to mention a couple things about the show, what's coming up. My website, tangledupintunes.com. But the show next week is going to be Jerry Garcia Band. I want to get back to a little JGB. It's going to be the Palladium, 1981, November 10th, the last time they ever played there, early and late show. Just two very diverse and very cool shows. I think you're going to enjoy that podcast. Of course, there will be musical highlights. And then the following week, Doug Schmell will be back. We're going to, it's going to be around the anniversary of the UCLA show, you know, from November 17th, 73, an all-time great show, obviously, 51 years ago. And you think of UCLA, you think of Bill Walton, recently passed away as well. And November 5th, it was also just recently his birthday, November 5th. So Bill Walton, Phil Esch are in our minds, on our minds. And yeah, it's amazing how music transcends. You lose a Jerry, you lose a Phil, but they're still with you every day because you listen to the music, which is, you know, different than if you an actor or, you know, other kind of artists. They don't stay with you the same way that music stays with you. So Phil, Jerry, they're always going to be with us, and the music carries on and it keeps getting better. And that's what I got for you this week. Like I said, we're going to close out Calaveras County Fairgrounds, August 23rd, 87. One of my favorite versions of Box of Rain. It opens up the show. Once again, I'm your host, Howard Weiner. Thanks for listening to the Phil Tribute. Speak to you next week. Peace out.
Lots of rain.